The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and I'm always joined by my two co-hosts here, Gray Oldenburg and Nathan Gladwell. Heavy NBA today as we're going to go through the NBA draft, some of the NBA award winners, some coaching changes around the league, and that'll wrap up the entire show for today. So let's hop into the NBA draft lottery. It happened this past Sunday on Mother's Day. Weird day to have the lottery. I guess it's not Wimby's lottery or Cooper Flagg's lottery, so there wasn't a lot of eyes on it. But it ended up being a pretty surprising outcome as the Atlanta Hawks ended up getting the number one overall pick, despite having a 3% chance to get that pick. And you had the Detroit Pistons, who I believe won 14 games last season, ended up with the fifth overall pick for the second straight year. I believe they're the only team to have the number one odds ended up falling to the fifth pick ever, and they've done it twice. So the Detroit Pistons and their fans are not in a good place. If you know anybody that's a Detroit Pistons fan, I recommend checking on them because there's nothing good about that team right now. I know you have Kay Cunningham, but he can't stay on the floor. Monty Williams is the most overpaid head coach in the league. I mean, the front office is a joke. It's a rough scene for them. And I would say the same thing about the Atlanta Hawks, but they get the number one overall pick. And I know it's not the Wembanyama draft or the Cooper Flagg draft, but they get the number one overall pick to hopefully start either rebuilding or adding to the roster alongside Trae Young, DeJounte Murray, whoever ends up being there next season with the carousel of players they've been going through these past couple of years since that 2021 playoff run they went on. And just to point out, Hawks won the lottery. This is the first time they've won the lottery, so good thing for them. Guys, looking at the Hawks winning the lottery, what do you think this means for them going forward? Because before this, people were saying, hey, it's probably going to be a full-on rebuild. They're probably going to move one of Trae Young or DeJounte Murray. You think it's still the same thing, or do you think they draft somebody here and sort of try to contend next season with the current roster?
I think the Hawks have the opportunity to do either now. You know, if you had asked me that last week, I would have said, yes, you need to trade Trae. You need to find somewhere else for DeJounte Murray. See what you can get for him. See what kind of capital you can build. You know, we saw what the Thunder did, you know, a few years ago with the Paul George trade and the Russell Westbrook and all that, and how amazing their rebuild is going right now. That's what I wanted the Hawks to kind of look towards them doing. But now with the number one pick, they have options now. You know, I know this isn't, you know, go pick Victor Wembanyama and build around him. This isn't go Flag and build around him. It's the one in between, which sucks for the Atlanta Hawks fans. But, you know, you have opportunities to do that now. So I think they go and attack it needs at this point. I think it's, because as frustrating as it was for the Atlanta fans this past year, with the talent that they had on their team, I still think if they're a few pieces away from being a playoff team in the East.
You see, for me, I'm still taken aback from Atlanta even getting the first overall pick. I mean, that was
ridiculous.
I don't know how much money they paid because this is obviously rigged. but I feel bad for Detroit, who continues to just suck at basketball, and they continue to end up with worse and worse picks. Very surprising. But of course, the NBA wants the Atlanta Hawks to succeed. It's a bigger market for them. Makes a lot of sense money wise. As far as number one overall picks go and where the Atlanta Hawks need to attack, like Gray said, they can go either way. They can go either direction, rebuild or try to refurbish the team, refurbish the roster. In today's NBA, if you do not have good role players, you will not succeed. It doesn't matter who you pick. It doesn't matter who your stars are. They can do everything. But if your role players cannot knock down open shots consistently and play good defense, it's not going to matter at the end of the day. You look at the teams that are still in the playoffs and have success. I mean, look at the Nuggets, who just won an NBA championship a year ago. Look at the Thunder right now. I know they're down the series, but look what they have. Look what they built around. And then, of course, you get to the East. You can say the Celtics, kind of, with Jason Tatum, and then they kind of built around them. It's a little bit more star power, but, you know, they still do good things. There are several different role players that step up in games and support the role of knocking down, it's like a 3-and-D roll. If the Hawks and land people like that in the offseason, and let's say go and draft a guy like Alex Sard to play at the center position, because I do not think Clint Capela cuts it anymore.
Don't even.
I think you need to go away from a guy in Trae Young who I think the fan base loves him. I love Trae Young in Atlanta, but as far as working out towards the future, DeJounte Murray has been the guy who overperforms more times than not. And you look at Trae Young and what he gives up on the defensive end, and you got to ask yourself at the end of the day, is it worth it? I think DeJounte Murray gives Atlanta a better chance to succeed. And if he is coupled with a guy like Alex Sarr, then I think it's going to be a better opportunity for Atlanta in the future.
Yeah, I think for Atlanta, it's going to come down to what they can get for what, how much they can get for each player. If they can get more for DeJounte Murray, then they can trade DeJounte Murray. If you can get more for Trae Young, then you trade Trae Young. I think Alex Sarr, the number one overall pick, if they were to pick him there, would be a perfect fit alongside either player. We know Trae Young loves to throw lobs to Clint Capela. I think Alexander Sarr is a much more mobile player than Clint Capela. Not hard to be that. He provides much more length, much more speed, for physicality. I think Clint Capela is on his way out of the door. He is, I think his contract's up, not this year, but next year. So they're going to have to find a replacement here soon. I know Kongu's on the roster, but he hasn't got a chance to start. I haven't seen a lot of him on the court. And Alexander Sarr gives him a good thing to do. But I think going forward, it's going to come down to what they can get on the trade market for all their players and how they build this roster going forward. If they build around Trae Young, or they continue to build around Trae Young, if they try to start rebuilding or building around DeJounte Murray and move Trae Young for some 3-and-D pieces, I think for this Atlanta Hawks roster, it's going to come down to this offseason being the biggest they've had in a long, long time, because the roster last season was pretty bad. I know they dealt with a lot of injuries, but the construction of it obviously was not good. Only made it to the play-in, did not win the play-in. I think going forward, you have to go out and you're probably going to have to move some guys. I think DeAndre Hunter is a big name you look for. Clint Capela, if Alexander Sarr is the number one overall pick, he probably has to be moved. I don't think he has a spot on the team anymore. And there's probably a couple other guys on the roster that I think could be moved around. And I think the Hawks have some cap space to make some moves this offseason. And I think with a number one overall pick, they have really jump-started a retooling process going forward, and I'm excited for who they draft. Looking at this draft board, I believe ESPN has a Zachary Richard as the number one overall prospect, but other people have Alexander Sarr as the number one overall prospect. Who do y'all think the Atlanta Hawks ultimately go up and get at number one, or they trade out?
No, I do think they stay at number one. I think they pick Sarr. I think he has the more upside in Atlanta. I don't think Richard, is that how you say his name? Richard, I don't know. Both French guys. I don't think he is the right fit in Atlanta. And I think Atlanta has the opportunity to pick for fit. You know, they're not like the Pistons where they got to pick the best player available. They have the opportunity to do that. And I think Sarr, just like Alex said, you know, moving away from a guy like Clint Capela and getting a better guy like Sarr in there is as easy as it is. And it's right there in front of you. If Atlanta messes this pick up, just like the Falcons did, there's going to be something to pay. If they pick Reed Sheppard or something like that, I'm going to fall over my seat.
I won't be on the next show if we pick Reed Sheppard number one overall.
Yes, he will. He will just sit here and suffer. Look, Alex Sarr is the right pick. I think he's the most complimenting pick to the current roster you have now. And I'm including if y'all trade Trae Young away in that. I like the way he plays. He's not as tall as Wimby. Let's get started there. He's not going to be the next Wimby. He is 7'1", but he does have a good build. He can dribble a little bit. He is very good in the offensive end. I think he needs to improve a little bit more in the defensive end. But as far as like where Atlanta needs production, they like to throw lots, like you said, Alex, and they like to attack the paint. And then on the defensive end, it's honestly not that bad at this current moment. I think the only problem has been Trae Young, which most of the time it's centers having to help off of their guy to help Trae Young, who's getting blown by. So you move Trae Young away, I think you solve your problems.
I think Alexander Sarr is a good mobile center to help Trae Young out if we don't trade him, much more than Clint Capela or Bruno Fernando was. He's watching those guys try to move around the paint made me just want to die. I mean, it was hard to watch them try to help Trae Young when they themselves couldn't even guard their own guy. So I think getting Alexander Sarr, more of a mobile big man, is going to be much more helpful if the Hawks end up keeping Trae on the defensive end. I think Okongwu is very similar to Alexander Sarr in that fact where they're very mobile, have long wingspans, and can somewhat space the floor and catch lobs Trae Young throws, or DeJounte Murray, whoever it ends up being at the point guard position. Great. Obviously, your Charlotte Hornets did not get the top pick you were hoping for. Did fall to number 6. What are your thoughts on the Hornets falling that far? And who do you think they address at that 6th pick?
You know, it's incredibly frustrating. You know, as somebody who the Hornets went up in from their odds last year, went from the 4th odds to the number 2 pick, where they ended up picking Brandon Miller, to having the 3rd best odds and dropping to 6. It sucks. But I think the Hornets, unlike the Pistons, again, and like the Hawks, have opportunities to pick for fit instead of best available. And I think around that 5, 6, 7 spot, there are going to be some players who fit the Hornets' needs, like a long wing, maybe come in and take over for Miles Bridges, or a guy that complements a guy like Grant Williams. You know, Grant Williams is not a long wing. You know, with that trade from when we traded away PJ Washington, getting Grant Williams, it changed the style of play when Grant is on the floor rather than PJ Washington. So I think getting a long wing, putting him alongside a guy like Brandon Miller, is something that the Hornets need to address. And I think right at that 6th spot, I think Matis Buzelis from the G League Ignite is the perfect pick for the Hornets. If he drops to 6, I will be happy with it, and we'll walk away with the 6th pick, even though that is not high enough for the season that the Hornets endured this year.
Even with his injuries this past season with the G League Ignite, are you still wanting to get Buzelis? Because we've seen the Hornets and their draft picks struggle with injuries. You have LaMelo Ball, who cannot stay on the floor whatsoever. Mark Williams dealt with injuries last season. I mean, Brandon Miller seems like the lone guy y'all have drafted in the past couple of years to stay healthy for an entire season.
Yeah, you're right. And that's the one thing that really leans me away from Buzelis, if there is one. You know, he's got tremendous upside. He's, you know, he's a 6'10 guard, basically, who can move and score in the post as well. He can do anything on the offensive end, and also very, very good on the defensive end. But his injuries, just like you said, Alex, the Hornets blew up this past year when everybody got hurt. When Mark Williams went out, when LaMelo Ball went out, when Gordon Hayward went out, it was just everything went downhill. The Hornets were tied for the 4 seed in the East at 22, 23 games into the season when everybody was healthy. And then everybody got hurt, and the Hornets ended up 2nd to last in the West, only behind the Pistons. So it's all about injuries. And, you know, if there's a guy that proves to me that maybe he can stay healthy, maybe a guy like Stephon Kessler or Dalton Knecht at that 6th spot, I think if Buzelis is there, he's got the better upside, so you pick him. But both of those guys I would be fine with as well to fill a need that the Hornets have.
David, flipping over to the Oklahoma City Thunder here, they get the 12th overall pick. They've had some success in the past drafting at that spot. They got Jalen Williams, who's been a major contributor this playoff run, and they drafted Steven Adams, who's one of your favorite players. What was that? 10 years ago, something like that, a long time ago, but they did find success with his 12th overall pick selection as well. So who do you think the Thunder get here at 12 to help address this team who is contending for an NBA championship, but with the trades they've made in the past, to have a lottery pick still?
Number one, you didn't bring up the most important 12th overall selection by the Thunder, Mr. Thunder basketball, Nick Collison. He is in the Raptors, Alex. I expect you to know that. But at the 12th overall spot, I've looked at several prospects. I think our biggest need to address is we need help on the boards badly. I'm not gonna sit here and say Chet's doing a terrible job, but he needs help. He's been a fantastic rim protector. But when you're in the air having to block shots, you're going to need someone on the backside to help you out on the boards. And unfortunately, we just don't have the height to deal with that right now. I think Jay Will has provided a lot of help off the bench. But then again, he does struggle at times on defense just because he is a smaller defender. And then I look at the rest of the roster. It might be beneficial to replace a guy in Josh Giddey with another versatile wing who defends better. Josh Giddey gets picked apart in the defensive end, and he does not produce enough on the offensive end to warrant him starting anymore, which I think the Josh Giddey experiment is coming to an end here soon. Unfortunately, even though I've liked his time in OKC with the rebuild, And I look at a guy like Cody Williams, of course, J-Dub's brother, coincidentally. He plays fantastic defense. I like the way he works in the offensive end. I think he'd slide right in, and the chemistry would just kind of mesh together with the rest of the roster. And I think that's major concerns with whoever anyone else drafts in the offseason. How do they mesh with the rest of the team? And for such a young Thunder roster, a guy like Cody Williams to slide right in there and get on with everyone, especially because his brother's already on the team. And then you look at possible centers. I think Donovan Quinion could be an answer. He can't shoot is a thing. The three ball is not there, and that's the biggest worry for me. This is not college basketball. You can't just expect to sit in the paint and post score the entire time. You can't be Zach Rudy Eady. Gobert. You can't be Zach Eady. You can't be all these guys. You're going to have to develop some sort of outside shot. So if we waste a 12th overall selection on a guy like that, how can we get him towards shooting? Look, I love the Steven Adams era in OKC, but the main thing that I was always concerned with was the fact that he struggled to space the floor sometimes because he didn't have that shooting aspect. And in the current roster state, with what Chet is being able to do, we are able to play five out, give Shea the opportunity to drive to the basket. And that is exactly why he leads the NBA in ISO points per game. And especially his drives are just off the charts. So he has off the charts success. And that has basically been the Thunder offense. So you got to think about spacing, number one, and then fit and chemistry. So I think obviously I would go with Cody Williams, but I honestly expect him to be taken higher off the board. So maybe we work out some kind of trade with someone else. We definitely have the tools to accomplish that. But you don't want to also get in the moment where you're overpaying for stuff and put yourself in a bad situation. So you just got to be cognizant of what you're doing.
Yeah, I want to point out somebody to you, Nathan. Khalil Ware, I know he was rumored to come to Alabama last offseason, ended up going to Indiana. He almost averaged a double-double, 15.9 points, 9.9 rebounds. But he is a pretty good three-point shooter, shot above 40% last year, shot about 1-3 a game, so he's not going to come out there and be Steph Curry or anything like that. But I don't think as a center for the Oklahoma City Thunder, you're expected to get out there and shoot 15 threes, 8 threes a game. You're expected to get out there and space the floor like you mentioned, like Chet does. I think Ware might be an option that the Thunder look for as that stretch big to play behind Chet or maybe play alongside him to give them another rim protector. Because as you mentioned, Joe Williams does struggle at times to protect the rim when he comes in relief of Chet. But he does shoot a three ball.
He does. I think he does a fantastic job at spacing the floor as well. And that's why he plays so many minutes throughout the game, even while being smaller. But yeah, I see what you're talking about there. But I'm going to leave it up to Sam Presti because obviously he's the wizard. He knows what he's doing. He is always at least five steps ahead of any other GM in the league.
Yeah, I mean, we all climb him for the Derek Lively, Casey Wallace trade, and look what that's doing. I mean, Casey Wallace might be the starting shooting guard next year the way Josh Giddey's looking. So as you said, don't question Sam Presti. He knows what he's doing. I mean, Jalen Williams got him 12th overall, and everybody was like, who is this? And look at him now.
Mm-hmm.
All right, moving on to the award winners from this past season in the NBA, you had the MVP go to Nikola Jokic. Nathan, I'm going to let you take the floor here because you have a horse in the race with Shea not getting the award. What are your thoughts on Jokic getting his third straight or his third MVP in the last, what, four seasons?
Yeah, first of all, congratulations to Jokic. I'm not going to sit here and say he didn't deserve it because obviously you look at his numbers, you look at his stats, what he's able to do, where he led his team to. I think he did a fantastic job this season, and he continues to do an outstanding job on the court and surprise so many people. I really think Shea got snubbed, and I know this award is not a team accolade, but you look at where the Thunder were a year ago. We were the 10th seed in the play-in, didn't make it out of the play-in, really struggled in several different areas, and Shea kind of willed the team to that point, just going from wherever we were a few years ago to getting to that 10th spot. And then you come to this offseason, we don't do a whole lot to improve the roster. We do things here and there. Of course, drafting Cason Wallace is big. But, you know, for the most part, the roster stayed the same. We did get Chet back, which was huge. But the way Shea was able to lead the team this year, it felt like he just took full control of the reins and just was the leader everyone expected him to be. And you look at this Thunder team, who is the second youngest in the NBA, jump up to the first overall seed, while Shea has these outstanding stats. He shared the sealed points per game, seals per game title with De'Aaron Fox. I think that's another huge thing that he's a two-way player I think that's another thing that benefits him. Averaged 30 points per game, 5.5 rebounds, 6.2 assists, very efficient shooting. I thought he did a fantastic job, and I really thought that he deserved it, especially the way he led such a young team. And then you look at them now, and they're still having some really good playoff success when people obviously doubted where they were going to be just because of the lack of the experience. So I think overall Shea probably deserved it more, but I'm not upset that Jokic won. I think that was another great choice. I'm glad Luka didn't win it. I don't think Luka deserved it at all. I think he plays one side of the court, and that is shown basically all season long. I look at the Mavs and where they had been for the past few years, and they just kind of been that middle of the pack team in the West that hasn't been able to make that next step. Maybe they do it against us in this playoff series, and then we're down 2-1. We have a game tonight. I don't know. I don't know if it's going to happen, but Luka has a lot more help than what Shea does. He has Kyrie Irving, who is, will probably be a first out Hall of Famer. So Luka has no excuses.
Great. You look at the award voting results, and I think I'm a little bit surprised considering it was much more of a lopsided win for Jokic than I expected. I mean, it felt like it was more down to the wire at the end of the season, but looking at it, Jokic got 79 first place votes and Shea got 15. Do you agree with Jokic getting that much votes over Shea, considering they both finished with the same record?
Not at all. Especially with the point that Nathan just made of the step that the Thunder took. Compared to the step that the Nuggets took, they won the NBA championship last year. They were dominant in the playoffs last year. He won the MVP last year. He didn't take a step. Now, again, just like Nathan said, this is not a knock on Nikola Jokic. He was fantastic. He's the best big in the league. He's one of the best bigs we've seen in a long time, especially in some of the things that he does, like his passing, like his feet, and like his moves in the post, and his ability to knock down the three, and all of these sort of things. He's a true unicorn as a player, and he deserves it. But Shea should have been the MVP. I mean, what does MVP stand for? Most valuable player. I know Nikola Jokic is a unbelievably valuable player, but Shea took a team who was 10th in the West last year, and they're the number one overall seed because of him. He averaged 30 a game, over 5 rebounds, over 6 assists, just like Nathan said, 2 steals. He plays both sides of the court, unlike Doncic. I don't get this one, and I especially, just to your point there, Alex, I especially don't get how it was so lopsided. You know, we've seen lopsided, you know, MVP votings. You know, we've seen really, really close ones. I thought this one was going to be very, very close. I thought it would be a three-way race because, you know, Luka's going to wow a bunch of people with his points and his assists, his ability on the offensive end. Shea deserves it. Jokic is going to be up there because of what he's done the past 4 years. He deserves to be up there. I thought it would be really, really close, and I was excited to see the race when the voting results came out. I was like, all right, that is not what I was expecting.
Yeah, talking about another lopsided race here, Defensive Player of the Year goes to Rudy Gobert. Seems like we just don't know who's Defensive Player of the Year anymore, and we just default button Rudy Gobert. And he ends up winning with 72 first place votes compared to Wembanyama's 19. After watching Rudy Gobert, especially this playoff run with the Minnesota Timberwolves, and the fact he missed a game and they still played, I think, even better defense than when he was there, do you think Rudy Gobert should be one of the three players that have 4 Defensive Player of the Years?
No. No. Yes. He's an outstanding rim protector. He's 7'1". I would be an outstanding rim protector if I was 7'1". He's very good. And he also is very good. You know, a lot of people don't mention the fact that the when you blocking shots isn't just being tall and long. It's about timing, and it's about, you know, the right hand and all those sort of things. He's very good at that. I don't even know if I would call him the best in the league at that, though.
Wembanyama?
But we're going to act like one of those guards or forwards isn't the best Defensive Player of the Year. They're the ones guarding the guys. Gobert's standing in the lane waiting for the guys to throw it at his hand. How is Drew Holiday not higher on this list? How is Herb Jones not higher on this list? How is Lou Dort not higher on this list? That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. The defensive player of the year always goes to a big man because of the block numbers, because he gets a lot of blocks, and that's a defensive stat. That does not mean you're a good defensive player. Rudy Gobert would get destroyed guarding Jamal Murray or Shai Gilgeous-Alexander or Luka Doncic or any guard in the NBA for 48 minutes a game. He would get destroyed. You know who wouldn't? Lou Dort, Herb Jones, you know, Drew Holiday, those guys. They do it every game. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's been a very big man-sided award for a while now. First of all, there was a big man to win it. It should have been Wemby. Wemby had far better stats than what Gobert was able to do. I think Gobert got benefit of that because he's won it already and because he's on a more defensive team that's had way more success this year. It's crazy how team success plays into that award, but not the rest. But we move on from that. As far as like guards go, I mean, you can make a very good argument for Shai, who led the league, he shared the title with De'Aaron Fox for leading in steals per game, which is a very impressive thing to do, especially when your offensive output is that big. But then you also mentioned guys like Herb Jones and Lou Dort and Drew Holiday, these guys who are consistently guarding a team's number one option and are having success. I mean, I think you look at Herb and what he's been able to do in the past few seasons for New Orleans, constant blocks. I mean, steals on ball. He plays great on the perimeter and he plays great on the inside too. There's not a flaw really to his defensive game. And yet I don't know how many times he's made a all defensive team. I think he made like the third team once. I don't even know if he's made a first team yet. And he doesn't get any love for defensive player of the year. And everyone continues to say, hey, look at this. Look at what he's able to do. He has all these defensive highlights. And yet you come down to award season and you don't hear a peep from people like that. So I just want it to be consistent. I want guards to have a chance to win this award too, because while big men do have a very, very hard job to block shots and rim protect and things like that, guards have a tremendous time having to get through screens, having to deal with these different game plans that are specifically made for them in mind so that the first overall option on any team can score. I think that's a way harder opportunity for those players to have, and they need to be rewarded for it.
Maybe on to the Rookie of the Year. I think it's no surprise that Wembanyama wins Rookie of the Year over Chet Holmgren, ends up getting all 99 first place votes. It becomes the first unanimous Rookie of the Year winner since Carl Anthony Towns did it in 2015, 2016. I don't think we're going to have any disagreement between anybody here. I know Nathan's a Chet Holmgren Thunder fan, but I think we can all agree that Wembanyama, the season he had, there's an argument.
For sure.
So moving on to the most improved player here, Tyrese Maxey. Ends up beating out Kobe White for this win here. And we look at Kobe White's jump in points. He averaged 9.7 last season, but now he's up to a career high 19.1 points this season. So he almost has a 10-point increase between the seasons. You look at Maxey, he had a 5.6 point per game increase. I know Maxey was an all-star, guys, but looking at what Kobe White had to deal with this entire season with the tumultuous Lonzo Ball saga that the Chicago Bulls have been through and Zach LaVine issues, do y'all think Kobe White should have got the award over somebody like Tyrese Maxey? We kind of expected to be good this year, but for Kobe White, we were kind of iffy on.
Yeah, it seems like Kobe White's taken the next step that the Bulls wanted him to take after they drafted him from out of North Carolina. It looked like Kobe White. This looks like Kobe White from North Carolina that I watched all season while he was a Tar Heel. I do think so. It seems like team success was also counted in this award as well. I think this is completely based on Philadelphia was better than Chicago, and that wasn't closed. But I don't think that had anything to do between, you know, Tyrese Maxey and Kobe White. If we're going to make these individual awards, make them individual awards and look at the individual. You know, because we got team awards. You know, if you want to win a team award, go win a damn championship. But then these, it's just like, okay, why are we talking about team success? So we're going to talk about team success. Why did Shai not win the MVP?
All right, let's move on to, because I think Nathan's a little bit flabbergasted over there.
I'm just going through the motions.
Sixth man of the year goes to Naz Reid over Malik Monk. I know Monk ended up suffering that season-ending injury in the latter part of the year. Naz Reid kind of ended up running away with it with the performances he was having with Cat being out. But you look at Malik Monk, he had the most points, assists, 20-point games, 25-point games, clutch points, field goals made, and threes made off the bench in the NBA this season. And he led the league in bench points last year, and it didn't win the award either. And he's the first player to lead the league in bench points in two seasons and not win the award. So do y'all think Malik Monk got snubbed again, or do you think with his injury, Naz Reid deserved this award?
Yeah, Monk got snubbed. Hey, what did I just say? Team success. Minnesota was very Sacramento. That's an easy answer. Why are we making these individual awards? Malik Monk was better than Naz Reid in every sort of aspect you could think of outside of rebounds. Because Naz Reid is 6'10", and Malik Monk's a shooting guard. It's, come on, this is getting ridiculous.
Any thoughts on it, Nathan?
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I think the injury to Malik Monk played a big part in this and the decision. That and the fact that Naz Reid has a huge cult following on social media. I think
no reason.
I don't even know why. I don't know where it came from, but it happened.
I think he was part of Joey Fam back then, wasn't he?
I don't even know. The dude went to LSU. Who cares? But Malik Monk definitely had an outstanding season. I think the fact that he got hurt, I think the way that Sacramento kind of took a, I wouldn't even say they did worse this year. They just had to play in a more competitive West, and they didn't get the high seed that they wanted. That they get, they didn't get the right. I don't know, man. I sit here and talk about team success. This is all we talk about, but then you go back to the end. Yeah, I'm done. I'm done with this.
Well, talking about team success, this last award we're going to go over is Coach of the Year goes to the Thunder coach, Mark Daigneault. He ends up taking 89 of the 99 first place votes. Coming in second was Orlando Magic's Jamal Mosley. I don't think there's going to be, once again, no argument with this award winner being Mark Daigneault. Nathan went over what the Thunder did with the Shea discussion about how they went from not even winning the play-in game to being the first overall seed in a very tough Western Conference. And I think a lot of that goes to Mark Daigneault and the way he coaches and the way he's built this roster with Sam Presti's help. So I don't think there's any argument here between anybody with Daigneault winning the award over somebody like Mosley.
Not at all. What the Thunder did this year, this is an easy decision. And this is the one where this is the one individual award where I'm like, yes, team success. It needs to play the biggest factor, and it's the coach. And this one's a no-brainer.
All right, let's move on to these final two coaching changes that have happened thus far. We're still waiting on the Lakers news. But starting with the Charlotte Hornets, they hire Boston Celtics lead assistant Charles Lee to be the team's next head coach. Greg, do you think the Hornets made the right decision here, hiring Lee over some of the other candidates?
I think that's the big kicker right there over some of the other candidates, because, you know, just watching this coaching search, which did take a long time. It seemed like the new owners really took their time with this one. They wanted to get this one right. You know, Steve Clifford coming back, I was not excited about it ever. It just it never got me going, really. Steve Clifford's had incredible success at the Hornets.
We seem to have lost Gray here a little bit.
Technical difficulties.
But
Alex, why don't you go ahead and speak on it?
The Charlotte Hornets hiring good old Charles Lee. Like Gray pointed out, I think considering the other candidates, it's they could have done worse. They could have hired Becky Hammond or JJ Redick.
God.
Yeah. No, he's back from his technical difficulties.
Okay. Yeah. That's, the technical difficulties, that was a little bad.
It's like the Hornets when they hire a head coach, they have technical difficulties too.
I'm not as mad at the hire as I originally was right when I saw it. I think Charles Lee comes into a team You know, he doesn't have any head coaching experience, but was the head assistant for Boston the past 4 years. I think he comes into a team where he can revolutionize the way that they play. I think he comes in because this roster's filling out. The Hornets, it's not a talent problem anymore. It's a health problem and it's a coaching problem. And hopefully the Hornets can address both of those this offseason, get healthy, and get a new coach in, get a new staff in, not just a new coach. It sounds like he's bringing some of his staff from Boston with him as well. I think it'll be interesting to see how he fits. You know, we could have hired Becky Hammond or JJ Redick. It's a relief. It's a relief.
I mean, y'all had some pretty interesting coaches these past few years, Gray. So I'm hoping he works out for y'all because y'all won a playoff series in 22 years. You yourself have not seen a playoff series win in your life.
No, I have not.
That sucks.
It really does suck. All right, moving on to the last hire here, or I guess firing then hiring. The Phoenix Suns fire Frank Vogel 11 days after the team was swept in the first round of the playoffs by the Minnesota Timberwolves. And then just one day later, the Suns replaced Vogel by hiring Mike Budenholzer as the team's next head coach. Kind of funny because Budenholzer did end up beating the Suns in the NBA Finals as the Bucks head coach. So coming full circle for the Suns and Budenholzer, who is an Arizona native. So it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. Guys, how do y'all think the switch from Vogel to Budenholzer is going to work out for the Suns? Is it better or is it worse?
Is Budenholzer a better coach? Yes. Do the Suns have the same roster? Yes. Will the Suns do better? No.
No.
Because that team will not work because of what they have built around, because of who they have on the team. Bradley Beal is a ghost of his former self. They need to trade him somewhere or send him away.
They Devin can't. Booker. There's no trade clause.
Oh, well, there you go. There you go. So Phoenix is just screwed. They have no one on the bench. I mean, they have Grayson Allen, but you might as well get in trading now with how good he's been doing. Might as well try to get assets from that. KD is almost to the point where he's washed. Devin Booker cannot play the point guard position to save his life. They don't have a true point guard who can run the offense effectively. And you know what? They miss Chris Paul. That's what they miss. Yeah. They just gave him away like that. So yeah. It's you know, this is what they deserve.
I don't understand, you know, I really don't understand the hype around Bradley Beal. I watched him probably more than a lot of people watched him when he was at Washington. He was not that good. He scored 50 points a game in games because he played for the damn Wizards. He had to. If he didn't, they would have lost by 60.
Empty stats.
Because those were the worst years for the Washington Wizards. You know, they're bad. They're not as bad as they were right now, but they were bad. And then Beal came along, but he's not as that good of a player. And then the Suns get him and they're like, oh my gosh, they're going to the finals. They're going to win it. They've got this big three with Booker, Durant, and Beal. I'm like, y'all, come on. That is not going to work. And it didn't. And I really like Mike Budenholzer as a head coach. I think he's had success everywhere he's been. He's been very, very good. Is he a better coach than Frank Vogel? Just like Nathan said, absolutely. Will he do any better than Frank Vogel? No.
Let me put it this way. The Suns could have hired Phil Jackson, and I don't think he would have got him any closer to an NBA championship.
Yeah.
Because the roster construction, salary cap management is awful. I mean, just go look at their payroll for next season, and you will just be mind-boggled how much they're playing their top three players, and then Grayson Allen and Yusuf Nurkic. All right, that's all time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.